Recently, I heard a doctor's story over the airwaves. It was about going somewhere to do doctoring and finding that before doctoring could meaningfully occur, the people first needed proper irrigation or maybe drainage. The point being that what they needed was to do with engineering, not the doctor's specialty. This story reminded me of a novel I'd read once by A.J. Cronin. And this example I learned from Wikipedia also shows the power of words, as his novel led to the creation of the UK's National Health Service. And his story, this novel is called The Citadel, took place in the 1920s in South Wales. The hero of the story was forced to do his first internship as a doctor's assistant in a mining town. And that meant a lot of ailments. Quote, "For an hour and a half, Andrew Manson, the doctor, sat in the little back shop cubicle, which was the consulting room, wrestling with a packed surgery until the walls sweated and the place was choked with the steam of damp bodies. Miners with bent knees, cut fingers, nystagmus, chronic arthritis. Their wives, too, and their children with coughs, colds, sprains, all the minor ailments of humanity. Normally, he would have enjoyed it, welcomed the quiet, appraising scrutiny of these dark, sallow-skinned people with whom he felt he was on probation. But now, obsessed by the major issue, his head reeled with the impact of these trifling complaints." Unquote. The major issue is typhus. Our hero at first tries to soldier on alone, once his attempts to raise the interest of the district medical officer, whose name is Griffiths, prove unsuccessful. He's confused as to the source until his colleague, Philip Denny, pulls his coat. Quote, "You've got cases too?" Andrew asked with tense interest. "Four, all in the same area as yours." He paused. "And these bugs, bacteria on a slide they're looking at, come from the well in Glidar Place." Andrew gazed at him, alert, burning to ask a dozen other questions, realizing something of the genuineness of the other man's work, and beyond everything, overjoyed that he'd been shown the source, the focus of the epidemic. "You see," Denny resumed with that same cold and bitter irony, "paratyphoid is more or less endemic here. But one day soon, very soon, we're going to have a pretty little blaze up. It's the main sewer that's to blame. It leaks like the devil and seeps into half the low wells at the bottom of the town. I've hammered at Griffiths about it till I'm tired." "That's a damn shame," Andrew burst out, forgetting himself in a sudden rush of indignation. Denny shrugged his shoulders. He's afraid to ask the council for anything in case they dock his wretched salary to pay for it. And my interjection, the budget is the money lever craftily converted into blunt instrument. It has ever been the daily tool of choice to keep us reined and feeling hopeless. Its use means they can put in storage the brute force. If we are only allocated so much of the earth's treasure and told we must live within those limits set, and we believe it, whether we as an individual or a community or a nation, we are reined in effectively. We got to talk more about that, how simple the containment is with that tool. Continuing with The Citadel. Having a frustrating day, Andrew stops by Denny's lodgings and finds his friend is very grim. Quote, "Philip, Denny, received him in morose silence with a gloomy eye and a darkened forehead. Then, after a moment, he said, Young Jones died this morning at 7 o'clock. Perforation." He spoke quietly with a still, cold fury. "And I have two enterics in Estrade Row. We must write to the Ministry of Health." "We could write a dozen letters," Philip answered with grim restraint. "And all we'd get would be a doddering commissioner down here in 6 months' time. No, I've thought it out. There's only one way to make them build a new sewer. How? Blow up the old one. For a second, Andrew wondered if Denny had taken leave of his senses. Then he perceived something of the other's hard intention. He stared at him in consternation. Try as he might to reconstruct his changing ideas, Denny seemed fated to demolish them. Manson muttered, "There'll be a heap of trouble if it's found out." Denny glanced up arrogantly. "You needn't come in with me if you don't want to." "Oh, I'm coming in with you," Andrew answered slowly. "But God only knows why." Denny had made his plan and timed it carefully. The late shift at the mine had gone in an hour ago, meaning gone home. A few lads hung about old Thomas's fish shop at the top end, but otherwise the street was deserted. Immediately above Glidar Place, they reached the main manhole of the sewer, a rusty iron cover set in rotten concrete, and they set to work. The gangrenous cover had not been disturbed for years, but after a struggle, they prized it up. Then Andrew shone the torch discreetly into the odorous depths, where on the crumbled stonework a dirty stream flowed slimily. "Pretty, isn't it?" Denny rasped. "Take a look at the cracks in that pointing. Take a last look, Manson." No more was said. Inexplicably, Andrew's mood had changed, and he was conscious now of a wild upswing of elation, a determination equal to Denny's own. People were dying of this festering abomination, and petty officialdom had done nothing. It was not the moment for the bedside manner and a niggling bottle of physic. His heart was thudding with excitement. It might not be orthodox medicine, but it was the best moment he had ever known. Unquote. Now, neither of these two doctors, or the doctor whose story I heard recently over the airwaves, in facing the reality of the situation they were in, said, "Hold on, wait a minute, I'd better go back and get my degree in this." No, they trusted their senses, their intelligence, their analysis of the situation. And they stood in solidarity with their brothers and sisters. They took humanity for their tribe. They came from a place of love.